How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are joined, as we are every week, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com here on Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, Sports Byline USA, and, of course, streaming live on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of news to talk about today, as we have every week, including the UFC 133 event from last night in Philadelphia. Sempervivi was there live. We'll talk to him about that show. We'll go down all of the matches from the event. Talk about some potential upcoming matches. The doom of Tito Ortiz. Was it really that big a deal? Was it really a no-lose situation for Tito? We'll talk about that. Plus the undercard matches, some of which you didn't get to see on television. What was good? What was bad? Full UFC report coming up on this show. This afternoon is also the TNA Hardcore Justice Show. We'll be telling you all about that. We'll run down the card for the event. We'll talk about all of the matches. Main event, Sting versus Kurt Angle for the TNA title. Talk a little bit about Impact this past Thursday night as well. And, of course, next Sunday, it is SummerSlam Sunday. They are calling it the biggest show of the summer. It is the WrestleMania of the summer. It's taking place in Los Angeles. And we just got the main event announced this past Monday night. So, not exactly the best build for a show. Is the show going to do well? Will it do better, worse than last year? We'll talk about that, plus run down the card for that show thus far. Also talk about the Money in the Bank buy rate. This was, of course, the CM Punk show. How did the show do? It was up? Was it up a lot? Was it up a little? Was it down? We'll tell you the buy rate for that show, or at least the initial indications from WWE, what that means, and what it may or may not mean for SummerSlam. Tons of other news as well, including Sin Cara returning on Tuesday night, a week early. We've got a bunch of Zuffa cuts. Fedor has been cut. Aleister Overeem has been cut. Several from the Golden Glory team have been cut. And some WWE cuts as well. 5 cuts so far. There are rumors that we might see a few more in the next couple of days. We'll tell you what happened, who got cut, and what people are saying about those cuts. Plus WWE financials, a WWE stalker, and more. It's all coming up after the first break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. My God, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to open it up with last night's UFC 133 event from Philadelphia. Mike was there in attendance. He's got some notes. Mike, I know you take notes. Got some notes on the show. We'll talk about the main event, all of the matches, some upcoming shows as well. This was the cursed UFC 133. I believe 9 changes to what was like, I don't know, a 9-match card. So, Mike, you were there in the building, and how was the show?
Boy, it didn't start off like it was going to be much. Late-arriving crowd, so it was pretty quiet. The ones that were in there were quick to boo. The fights were not all that exciting, although they were interesting. Something about the preliminary fights, I'm sitting next to Josh Nason. We're judging the fights as they're going along, and I have it a little bit different than him, and I got it different than the decision. And I talked to Todd Martin afterwards, and he's got a little bit different. It's like, man, what did I see differently? And then I get home and listen to you and Dave look online about how other people had scored the fights. And one thing about the preliminary fights, even though they weren't all that exciting, and even though they were, you know, if you were watching on Facebook, I mean, they weren't painful, but they weren't the best either. And for already, a show that the diehards would be watching, they're already knowing going into this thing that it may not be all that great anyway. So you're coming in with a touch of malaise. One thing you can say about those preliminary fights is the way everybody had them, everybody seems to have it differently. So if anything came out of it, if there's a silver lining to that, at least it created some talk, and there's some, some talk about how you can judge things. And with people, California going to the half point system for amateurs to try that out, it kind of shows that, I know a lot of people are proponents of that system. Realistically, though, here was a show where you were still probably going to end up with draws if you would have went that direction and had half points and things like that. But by the time that the show actually started, and obviously the spike, the Gustafsson knocking out Hamill was much needed to kind of pop the crowd and to get, viewers really into ordering this pay-per-view. By the time the thing was over and as it rolled along, the crowd got bigger, they were loud, they were vocal. They came out at the press conference the day before for Vitor Belfort, and then obviously the main event with Tito and Rashad. I mean, Tito, for anything you can say about him, is still looked at as a major star, and Rashad Evans, for whatever reason, because there's a lot of us who go, I don't get why people don't like him. I mean, I kind of do. There's a pro-res part to that I do actually understand why people don't like him and how he carries himself and how good he is and that whole package. You know, they were looked at as huge stars. So for the main event, I'm not sure how it came across on TV, but I believe it came across pretty good from how people are saying that this is, you know, thumbs way up to this show. I mean, they really saved the show, and I got to be honest, I was kind of looking forward to Phil Davis and Rashad Evans, even though I know it's way too early in Phil Davis's career, and this was going to be a fight that kind of is going to draw more money. I was kind of thinking of the show, well, it was cursed anyway, so I kind of, you know, I wanted to see where Phil Davis was at. You know, to me, it was a no-lose for him, even though people thought it could be bad. It's like, well, if he wins or has a great showing, it's great for him. If he gets blown out, it's like, well, you know, he's always got the excuse that he probably shouldn't be at that level anyway. But how everything turned out with Tito there and the fight that he and Rashad had, which, you know, give him credit, what was it, 3 weeks' notice or whatever it was, did not want to take the fight, you know, ends up, goes ahead and takes it. You know, it ended up being a great night overall.
You know, I don't want to talk too much about scoring here, but I do have to say, I'm not a fan of the idea of half points. I've always hated the idea of half points. With that said, this was the first show that the first round of that Tito Ortiz-Rashad Evans fight, when it was over, all I could think was, if there was ever in the history of MMA a 10-8.5 round, that was it right there. You know, I always, thing I hate about the idea of the half point system is, to me, you got a 10-point must for MMA. I've talked about this a million times. You've got a 10-point must, but, you know, no one ever uses the 10 points or even close to the 10 points. Everyone either gets a 10-9 or a 10-9. You know, maybe every now and then you'll get a 10-8, but it's rare. Okay. To me, you know, the people that are like, oh, well, let's do 10-10, 10-9.5, 10-9, 10-8.5, and 10-8. I'm always thinking like, okay, so you're saying that these judges are stupid, because that's what most people say. The judges are incompetent, you know? So you're going to take an incompetent person, and now you're going to add in math involving half points. You know, to me, it's like, okay, I understand if you want to have a bigger spread, okay? If you want to have a bigger spread and give people more options for a round, then you do 10-10 is a draw, 10-9 is a guy won the round, maybe not decisively, but he won the round. A 10-8 is he dominated the round, and a 10-7 is he nearly finished the round. And it's exactly the same as half points, except you don't have to deal with adding up half points or trying to explain to your friends what a half point means. You know, you just say, okay, well, that round, you know, the first round of the Tito fight was a 10-8. Easy, you know? But we've got to add in these half points and add. The thing is, here's the thing. When, to me, with judging of late, the issue is not, was that a 10-9 or a 10-8? You almost never hear that, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, you almost never hear people, when there's a bad decision, go, oh, I can't believe that judge gave that a 10-9 and not a 10-8. You almost never hear that. What you hear is, I can't believe that judge gave the round to the other guy. Now, yeah. If you have, I don't care if you have half points, quarter points, use more of the 10-point must, it doesn't matter. If you have a judge that thinks the other guy won, then it doesn't matter what your scoring system is. It's still going to be screwed up. So to me, the issue is not, should that have been a 10-9 or a 10-9-5 or a 10-8-5 or a 10-8 or whatever. You need to find a judge who is not going to think that the other guy won a round that someone else. Now, with all that said, there was not one round on this show where, you know, well, I mean, I had certain scores, I'm sure you did, and some judges saw the other way, but these were all in close fights. And in a close fight, even if you have half points, it's not going to matter anyway. So, like, the further that I go into this, the more I think, you know, just do the regular 10-point must, forget the half-point system, just get some judges who can figure out if one guy got the 10-9 or the other guy got the 10-9. We have to keep this thing simple, especially if your belief is that judges are incompetent. And keeping it simple does not mean adding points, which was what I originally suggested, or adding the half-points. It's just, it's not going to make any difference. You're still going to have incompetent judges who think that Tito Ortiz won the first round of that Rashad fight.
Well, that's it, yeah, and that's the thing, too. It really comes down to judges that actually know what they're doing, because, again, if they don't know what they're doing, then giving them another half point is just going to, you know, give them another way to screw it up. And I don't know if it will change draws or anything like that, but realistically, say you're supposed to use that half point system to exactly what it's supposed to be. And, you know, and it, one round is 10, 8.5, the other round is even, the other round is 10, 8.5 the other way. Doesn't matter, it's still a draw. So it really doesn't matter. And again, too, I mean, it's also, the 10-point must system is fine, but you can also, the thing is, it's based off boxing. And it was always simple for boxing, even though people would screw this up. And again, every fight is different, so, you know, this wasn't always the case. But, you know, 10-10, even round, but they're asked not to do that, so they don't. 10-9 round, the guy won it. 10-8 round, there was a knockdown. 10-7 round, there was two knockdowns. And even at, you, when there's three knockdowns and a fight actually continues to go, you usually never see a 10-6. Well, what happened to Brock Lesnar? Say Nam Phan last night doesn't get out of Mike Brown, and he gets big brothered for the next 20 seconds in the round. Could you say that's equivalent of two knockdowns in boxing? That should probably be a 10-7 round. He was thoroughly, thoroughly dominated. Even though he wasn't close to being stopped, he was dominated to the point where he could do nothing. It was essentially like he got knocked down twice because he was on the ground getting big brothered for 5 minutes. So, you know, do you use a half point or you just go ahead and give a full point? Again, like you said, you don't want to confuse the issue any more than it already is, especially when it doesn't matter. Now, in California with these amateurs, if they find out that it works, hey, I'm all for it. Anything to make the system better. But when you still have Cecil Peoples, and there, you know, there's guys in boxing, you know, there's a million to one names you can say. And the thing is with a lot of these judges, they are judges everywhere. They are licensed in Nevada. They're licensed in New York. They're licensed in New Jersey. A lot of the bigger ones are. They're licensed all over the world. That's why you see them traveling, like Stanley Christodoulou from South Africa and guys like that. I mean, they're all over the place. So, again, it's experience and getting better in who these commissions, you know, put up as far as judging boxing or judging fighting. But, you know, looking at the commissions, they got enough problems as it is. So it's probably not something that's going to go away anytime soon.
I promise we're not going to talk about judging anymore on this show. I just wanted to make that point there, and Mike got his statement in. So when we come back, we'll talk more about the show that didn't have problems in the judging. Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour and a half. And I promised before the break we would not talk any more about judging. But, I don't know. I've been a heel in my career. I lied. I just want to say one more thing about judging very quickly. I'm going to make this quick. I just make this very quick. When you talked about the California experiment of working with the half-point system and finding out if it's successful, and then they take it to the, you know, try and get it instituted nationally and all the different commissions. The only thing I got to say about that is the problem with this is like you sort of noted, let's say that California employs like Bill Douglas and Dave Meltzer and, I don't know, whoever else.
John McCarthy.
And they're experimenting with this system. And they're like, lo and behold, this half-point system, it's much better on these amateur fights. We need to take it national. And then, yeah, that might work out great if you're doing an experiment with people that know what they're doing. But as soon as you take a system that works with people who are competent and you give that system to people who are known incompetence, they're going to screw your system up. Just want to throw that out there. Let's talk about this fight, this show, Mike. Tito Ortiz and Rashad in the main event. I love the fight. It got best fight of the night. It was a pro wrestling story, really, because Tito Ortiz was the guy. He hadn't won in 5 years. He goes in there with Ryan Bader, and he chokes him out with a guillotine, and the place goes nuts. And Tito Ortiz, essentially, he has built a finisher, the guillotine. So he goes in there with Rashad Evans. He takes the fight on 3 weeks' notice, so only has like 2 weeks to train. And granted, he'd peaked, but still, you know, he started, you know, relaxing. You know, he wasn't training for a week after that fight with Bader, or training hard at least. And then he has to get right back into hard training for 2 weeks, and then taper down again. Has to make weight again. This is not easy, and it's not good, and it's not smart when you're 36 years old. But he did it. He goes in there. He kind of gets beat up the first round. Like I said, if you're ever going to give a guy a 10-8-5 round, this was it. He wasn't close to finishing Tito, but boy, did he give him a whipping. So Tito comes out for the second round. He's tired. He's not moving very fast. Rashad is just eating his lunch. And all of a sudden, Tito grabs that guillotine, the same move he used to beat Ryan Bader. And the place just goes nuts. They think, oh my God, Tito's going to beat him again with his move. And Rashad, who later claimed it wasn't on tight, this man is squirming. This man is trying to get out of this guillotine. And he finally gets out, and poor Tito's spent, and Rashad lays a beating on him, and Tito gets beaten. And it was a great story. You know, Tito had nothing to lose here, I thought. I thought it was a good... He could have gone in there and got completely blown out. He didn't. You know, and he didn't make excuses. A lot of times when Tito loses, he makes excuses. This was actually his chance to make an excuse. Took the fight on short notice. Didn't have time to do a proper training camp. Came in here. He was tired. He was overtrained. And he lost. Nope. He just said Rashad was the better man. I mean, Tito was just like, he was awesome on this show. And he'll be around for a while, but how was the fight in the building?
It was awesome. And again, for all of the reasons that you said, too, you know, I talked to older wrestling guys, Jerry Oates and guys like that, and it's just like, you know, you got to watch MMA because in a lot of ways, it is what wrestling used to be. It's what promotion should be. Gabe Sapolsky from Dragon Gate's there, and it's, you know, for his first UFC show, and it's like, the music Tito Ortiz comes out to, he hinted at it in the countdown to the show, Cinderella Man, great name for him now. The Huntington Beach Bad Boy, yeah, it's still a way to sell stuff, it's still a name, but now he's kind of a little bit older, he's a little bit more mature, if you forget about the fact he posts naked pictures of himself on Twitter, but he's kind of got this Cinderella Man thing going, so why not, taking the fight on short notice. Rashad comes out there, Rashad knows he's going to get booed, he's got people that love him, people that hate him, he plays into that perfectly. Cut a perfect post-fight promo afterwards. I mean, the music, the aura, the fact that they're both superstars, I mean, it was absolutely awesome. And one thing, I mean, and it was to the point, too, and this show tells you everything. Apparently, Sirius did a live show before the show where, you know, they asked a bunch of, you know, every media member said the same thing. Everybody said Rashad was going to win this fight. Every fan you asked, whether they believed it or not, or they were just saying it because they've been so whipped into a frenzy, but almost all of them said Tito Ortiz. And that it showed in the building when these guys came out, and it was an explosion, and this was two superstars and a hardcore area, you know, getting into it. And Tito, and it showed, too. Everybody knows he took the fight on short notice. But Tito, you know, unlike a Matt Hamill, where somebody would have folded or something like that, he was in there to the bitter end. And, you know, watching the demise of a guy in MMA fights and in boxing, it's when you see the amazing knockout or when you see something like that, it's something that sticks with you, like Rampage falling over the ropes after getting tie clinched and kneed to death by Wanderlei, and Don Fry and Takayama, where Takayama sinks down, and things like that that you always remember. And this was another one, too, and it was classic slow motion with Rashad faking the knee to the head, hitting Tito in the gut when he was on his knees, and he just kind of crumpled over, but it was in that way where it was, even though you saw a guy get knocked out and even though he was pretty much dominated throughout the whole fight, it was the experience of the whole thing, and that really showed. And, you know, all the dark clouds going into this show, I mean, that was, it was really, really awesome and something that really, really saved that show.
Yeah, the thing with fights is Tito showed at the last show with Bader, you never know who is going to win a fight. Like, before the Bader fight, I mean, there was not a single person in the world that picked Tito Ortiz. He hadn't won in 5 years, for crying out loud, and he was facing, like, a younger, stronger version of himself. So, you know, nobody picked him, but after he beat Bader, everybody suddenly realized the thing that everybody already knew anyway, which was that anybody can win a fight. And, you know, it was easy to come up with a reason why Tito could win this fight. You know, he had peaked for a fight. Yes, he had to take another fight on short notice, but at least he was in shape prior to doing that. Rashad hadn't fought in over a year. You know, Tito was a physically larger man. You know, there
Rashad's
were a lot of different
brandy new camp.
Sure, there were a lot of things that you could say if you wanted to argue that perhaps you know, perhaps Tito was going to win that fight. As it turned out, he didn't. But, you know, it wasn't like the Bader fight where you just thought, oh, there's no way that anything like that can happen.
By the way, I'm insulting Rashad. I mean, great suits, the whole nine yards. rolled out of the arena in a car with, you know, Van Arsdale and a couple other people that was just way too small for him. Rashad should be seen in a Cadillac at all times.
The
wrestling thing too. You don't want your, you know, you got Ric Flair was not driving around in like, you know, a 78 like Crown Vic or anything like that with spoke rims and like, you know, wood paneling on the side or something like that. Rashad needs to be in a Cadillac at all times.
Well,
at least that's why people hate him. And that's one of the things too that's so great about Rashad Evans. I mean, there are people that and they don't even know why. They just hate him. They liked Rampage from back in the day, this, that, or the other. There's whatever reason it is, but he plays it up so fantastically. It's great, and he's just, it is amazing. Because, again, the people that don't like him, for a lot of reasons, they can't really tell you why, but he's just got something about him, and it's, you know, it was on, you know, it showed again. And he said afterwards, too, if there's an injury or something like that, because he took so much time off, and I forget who the original fight was supposed to be against, was it Shogun? Where Shogun got hurt and he refused to take a fight because he didn't want to lose his title shot, which led to the John Jones stuff and all that going on. You know, he said if that ever happens again, he's going to take a fight. There won't be a time where he's going to take time off.
I think it's with Rashad, it's like, I don't know, it's like his face. Like, he has some sort of combination of his eyes, his mouth, and his eyebrows that all combine in such a way that I think no matter what he says, he comes off as if he's whining. You know what I mean? And he doesn't. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes I watch him and it's like, I can see when this guy talks and people look at his face and they're just like, oh, why do you have to, I don't know.
Well, he's got that chubby little face too. I mean, he doesn't do it to me because I like it and I like the charisma and I think he's animated and I get it, so I like him. But it's like, who's the band leader? And the barrister, R.D. Evans, and like the Barrado brothers in Ring of Honor, they just look like guys you want to punch in the face. And I could see that's how, like, Rashad, just when he gives that big goofy smile and he's winning and you already don't like him anyway, he's just, for some people, the kind of guy you want to punch in the face.
He did have an awesome promo afterwards where he called out Bones, and at the end he just says, I'm coming for my belt. And he went, grrr. And I just thought he was awesome. So that's next.
Wrecked shop, by the way, too, in the post-fight press conference, you know, comparing Rampage to Frankenstein and getting his role on, talking about John Jones and everything. So, I mean, that was perfect in the post-fight, too.
That's the next fight, Bones-Jones and Rampage. The winner's going to face Rashad. And I guess we'll see. I see Bones running through both of them, quite frankly. Thing with Rashad, I've always noticed this about Rashad, and obviously it didn't make any difference last night, but especially like I always noticed it on Ultimate Fighter when him and Quentin were having their stare downs, and you know, whenever they'd get forehead to forehead and start yelling at each other, it's like, good God, he's a small light heavyweight, you know? Rampage is just he's so much bigger, and Tito tonight was so much bigger, and Bones Jones is like, he's a pterodactyl in there. He's just this giant beast. And I don't know. I just see him going in there and just throwing Rashad all over the place and just giving him a beating. I could be wrong, but...
I don't think you're giving Rashad enough credit. And I mean, not that that couldn't happen, but I don't think you're giving him that much credit. And I know, you know, the only fighter that Rashad's fought like that was Lyoto Machida, and you saw what Machida did to him at the end of that fight by getting caught, and he got cute and then got hurt and then decided to smile and stand in there and, you know, was not the smartest move. I mean, that could happen with John Jones, too, but I think it's going to be a far more even fight than you think it is, even though, you know, a knockout is, you know, that's probably going to be a fight either way that's going to end in some sort of knockout.
Maybe we're going to have to take a wager on this one here, Semper Vivi.
Okay. I'm
big into
action.
Wagering of late. I don't know if you've listened to the Todd Martin shows on the website, but...
Todd's
getting me into wagering, because I'm so certain of being correct, and I'll give you an example here. Actually, we better talk about it here after the break, but I got a $50 bet, of all things, with Todd Martin, and I am a cheap man, so a $50 bet should tell you how confident I am about what I'm going to talk about after the break here. So we'll talk about that here in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For all the latest news and info in pro wrestling and MMA, head to WrestlingObserver.com. That is our website. And what do you get at WrestlingObserver.com? Why, this show every single day. If you love Wrestling Observer Live and you only get to hear it once per week on Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92 or Sports Byline USA, you are missing out. We do daily radio shows. We just did a radio show like 12 hours ago, in fact, at WrestlingObserver.com. Myself and Dave Meltzer, a full hour running down the UFC pay-per-view. We talked about WWE Financial, Sin Cara, a lot of stuff we're going to talk about today here on the program. We're going to be up again tonight after the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, running down all of the matches of the show. We'll be back again on Monday with a brand new show after Raw. Dave and I are going to be up on Wednesday with Jens Pulver as well. I do guest shows every week. Had some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling on our show. Bryan Danielson, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino, Mick Foley, Chris Jericho. The list goes on and on. Tons and tons of huge names. We have thousands of shows in the archives. Somebody added them up the other day. We have over 3,000 shows in the archives. If you sign up today, you not only get all of the brand new shows we do, which is 15 to 20 per week, but you have full access to the 3,000 or more shows in our archives. So if you have a commute, if you like to listen to audio at work, if you just love this show and you don't get a chance to check it out any more than once per week, go to WrestlingObserver.com and you too could have daily wrestling and mixed martial arts talk. If you want to know more, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Absolutely free. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to give any information. Just go to the website, click on the link. It's an MP3 download it, listen to it. If you love it, sign up. It's only $10.99 per month. We don't hold you to anything. If you sign up for a month and you don't like it, you never sign up again. Or if you want to, you can sign up for recurring. We'll just bill your PayPal every month and you'll have unlimited forever. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. I do shows. Mike Sempervivi does shows. We have shows covering wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, everything. It's all up there at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. The bet that I was making and I talked about before the break, Mike, was with Todd Martin, who does our show every week. We were talking MMA, and a couple of months back, Dana mentioned that they were going to be moving to five-round main events. All main events on all the shows were going to be five rounds, whether it was a title fight or not. And as noted, UFC 133, nine substitutions, including the main event being changed three times. And something that I'm not sure a lot of people are aware of, but when you sign a bout agreement for a fight, let's just say that Mike Sempervivi, you and I are scheduled for the semi-main event at UFC 138. We're going to be fighting. And we sign our bout agreement. We agree to a three-round, five-minute round fight. And whoever the main event is on the show, Fedor Emelianenko versus Randy Couture, even though they're both out of Zuffa. Just say that's the main event. They're scheduled for five rounds. And for whatever reason, both guys pull out or they get fired. And so now we are in the main event position. They cannot legally change our fight to a five-rounder. We signed a bout agreement for a three-rounder. So if we move up, that means that the main event of the show is going to be a three-round fight, not a five-rounder. Now, the bet that I made with Todd Martin was I said in 2012, I guarantee that at least 40% of the main events are still only going to be three-round fights. And he said, no way. I'm winning this $50, Mike. I'm just winning the $50. Because all that means is that 40% of the main events in 2012 are going to be scrapped. And I firmly believe that that's very possible.
See, I would never make a bet on that till more research was in. After next year, I would make a bet on that using you guys as the guinea pigs. But I'm not going to say that your number would be way out of whack. Because if you think about it, again, too, now what if the UFC's got a really good fight that could move into a spot like that, then they'll probably negotiate, give them some more money. They'll do something if they think it's going to be a good enough five-round fight. If that semi-main event was good enough to bump into the main spot and they can negotiate it, it'll happen. But realistically, I can see it not happening on a lot of shows if it happens on a versus show or a spike or, you know, something like that. You know, I can see that, you know, I can see them keeping it three rounds, and that's fine. And again, it happens in boxing a lot. It's just one of those things. If it's the title fight drops out at the last minute, goes, you know, and then your semi-main event's a 10-round fight anyway. And the thing is, you can always have quote-unquote number one contenderships. There are things you can add to it, too, where if you wanted to add two rounds, you can, as long as you can negotiate it with the fighters. But, you know, realistically, with the amount of shows they run and everything, yeah, I can legitimately see that. Absolutely.
There's just, I mean, yes, you could try to renegotiate a contract, but, I mean, seriously, if you've been training for a three-rounder for 8 weeks and 3 weeks before the fight, you know, you're told, okay, the main event dropped. Can you do a five-rounder now? And you've got to taper off the last week anyway, so that gives you 2 weeks to be ready to go from a three-rounder to a five-rounder, to be able to go from 10 minutes to 25 or 15 minutes to 25 minutes. No way people are doing this. It's just not going to happen.
No, but I think you're underestimating the level of pro. Like, if you got, again, if you got a good enough semi-main event, there are probably guys that would main event on another card. So, you know, I don't, you know, and again, you look at it and you go, well, look, it's an equal advantage or disadvantage, quote-unquote, for both guys. You know, but, you know, if it's worth the money, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars extra. We won't hold it against you, you know, like you would take like Tito. You wouldn't hold it against him. They took a fight on short notice, got blown out. Nobody expected anything anyway. It's cool in the gang and all that. Same thing in this case, too, where it's like you're not going to hold it against the fighter or anything like that. So as long as they're down with it, and again, if you got a pro, you work in a semi-main event, you know, I think it would actually be okay. I don't think, because, I mean, your top guys are, they should be able to go 25 anyway. That's why they're in that position. So, they train for longer than that. Boxers train for longer than fighting 12 rounds. You know, the good ones and the smart ones do. So, I don't think it'll be all that big of a deal, especially because it's going to happen with both guys.
I'm winning this $50.
You know what? I'm not doubting you.
Winning this $50. Now, let's talk some more about MMA in this hour. We'll talk about pro wrestling next hour. Any other thoughts on UFC 133 before we move on?
Akiyama's still sexy.
Is he?
He is, even though he was put to sleep. And by the way, am I the only one who noticed the last two shots were like on his, you know, the back of his neck on the soft part of his head?
Yes, not good.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. Look, Akiyama, I don't want him to be cut. I don't want Monday to come, and I don't want Dennis Hallman and his short shorts, his Joe Thons, Joe San Thongs. I don't want him cut, and I don't want Akiyama cut. He can't go back to Japan and fight because of the situation over there. I mean, he could, but it's not the same. Korea didn't blow up like they thought it would. China's not ready yet. Where does he really go? And it's kind of craptastic. I mean, he could still get over in Russia fighting because of his judo and stuff like that. But it just, they're not getting their use out of him. And if it's because he wants to fight at 185, if he's steadfast on that, fine. Let him go. There's nothing you can do. But if they cut him without at least kind of forcing him or asking him to go to 170, or, I mean, and he's one of those guys, too, that, again, like a Clay Guida, I would make an exception for Nate Diaz. I would make an exception for have a catch weight fight every once in a while because you know what he's going to bring, and you know against the smaller guy he'd use the judo more, the punches would be more effective, it would be more fun. Utilize him in catch weight fights. Can you imagine him and Nick Diaz at 174? I mean, you know, or 175, how awesome that would be. It's okay to utilize stuff like that, and I hope he's not cut on Monday. Because, again, he's got an aura, and he wasn't over. I heard Dave say that, you know, talked to some people there, Akiyama was really over. I think it was a surprise to a lot of people, the entrance and everything that went with it, and it was like, wow, who is this star, you know? But they weren't into him like they were with Belfort and with Evans and Ortiz. It wasn't even close. I mean, he didn't get a reaction really at the pre-fight weigh-in or anything like that. It was just those three, and he wasn't over like he is in a lot of other places. But, you know, the charisma and everything else did radiate, and that's the thing. I think people saw him now for the first time in Philadelphia, and it's like, if you see Akiyama, you're going to probably fall in love with the charisma and the look and all that sort of stuff, too. The entrance, the whole nine yards, and the fact he's an exciting fighter. And, again, hopefully they give him the chance to go to 170 or at least have some catchweight fights for him because they didn't get their use out of him. And it's too bad if he goes back to Japan or somewhere else where he kind of goes into the abyss because I think he's still got more to give, but he does not have more to give at 185. And that was just, I'm not saying it was an unfair fight. it was just a, I would not have actually signed that fight, so.
Fedor axed. They cut him from his deal, three fights in a row, three losses in a row. They actually did offer him a an acceptable amount of money. I don't know if acceptable is the right word, but they offered him a
fair market value?
Fair, I don't even know how you can explain what they offered him, but they offered him some money, and it was turned down. So
great catch, homie.
He is done for.
Well, you know, that's, we talked about it last week. If you got to give M1 Global money, or if you have to change anything you're doing, you saw that with Golden Glory at the beginning of the week, too. They made a clean sweep of Golden Glory fighters, except for Sergey Kharitonov, and I think one other one, but they'll probably be, you know, soon to follow if they lose their fights. Even if they don't lose their fights, I can see that happening. Marlos Conan gets hurt in the mix of this stuff, but, you know, they're not going to negotiate with M1 Global or Golden Glory. It's with the fighters, and you know what, Fedor? Somebody's going to pay him big money. Him and Overeem could actually they could save and actually have a New Year's Eve show in Japan this year if both of those guys fight on it and have some other stuff on it. Now, if anybody in Japan's got enough money to do that, I don't know, but it's something that could work, and it's really the only fight that those guys truly have outside of the UFC for something big and flashy unless Barnett or Kharitonov is cut. And obviously, Kharitonov is probably not fighting Overeem. So it's, you know, if they don't want to take the deal, fine. You know, it's just times change, everything has changed, and it's the UFC's ball game. And Fedor, I'm sure he probably knows exactly what his value is at this point. He's not a dumb guy. As far as his management goes, well, you know, that's what you go do what you got to do. You know, if you can go make money in Russia or Amsterdam or wherever else it is, go on and do it.
You know, prior to the first of his three losses, when he got triangled, and it was just like this, everybody just could not even believe, oh my God, Fedor lost. Prior to that, when there were still a lot of people that thought he was unbeatable, and by the way, apparently there are still some that believe he's unbeatable even after three losses. What was that?
Fools.
Well, yeah. But anyway, the point is, before that first loss, he was offered... Well, I should say M1 Global was offered by Dana White a... you remember on Raw where Vince McMahon said that CM Punk was an ingrate, or this was on the pay-per-view, because he'd offered him more money than he'd ever offered anybody else, and Punk refused to accept? That is essentially what happened with Fedor. Dana White made him a preposterous offer, the M1 Global people, and they turned it down. At which point, Fedor proceeded to go and lose. And it's funny, because that may have been, like, the biggest management faux pas in the history of mixed martial arts. And if they would have accepted and he would have gone to UFC, most likely he would have lost three straight in UFC, and we would be looking back going, that was the biggest signing mistake in the history of Zuffa. So one way or the other, and I like Fedor, you know. I'm sad that this is the end for Fedor. I mean, you know, always comes off as a nice guy, and people love to watch him fight, and he's beloved, and no matter how many times he loses, there's always some sort of excuse from his biggest fans. I mean, just, you know, they passionately love the guy, but, you know, it's what a fall. I mean, what a fall this was.
Yeah, talk about a little bit more after the break, too. But, you know, it's not like everyone should have saw this coming. We all watched Fedor long enough to know, you know, post, you know, Mirko, where this thing could have been going. But, yeah, you could have actually had Fedor and Brock. Mm-hmm. You could have had Fedor and Brock.
Yeah. That would have been a big money fight.
That Brock possibly could have lost if he could have, you know, he survives the onslaught, hits him with one of those big heavy left hands or something like that. Yeah.
Back after the break, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking some Zuffa cuts here on the program, pro wrestling in the next hour. And Mike, very sad that Marlos Kunin ended up getting caught in the crossfire. She lost her title to Misha Tate at the Strikeforce show last week in a fight she was actually doing fairly well in until she got caught in a head and arm choke. And your thoughts on the axing of Marlos?
Yeah, really disappointing because I really liked her a lot, too. And because she was, you know, hit with buckshot in this deal with Golden Glory, you know, by association, the women's division, which obviously they have no interest in at all, takes a major, major hit because her facing Misha Tate again, or the winner of Tate Kaufman 2, you know, they're... Again, there were good odds of it happening in the first place, and now this pretty much puts it to bed. And again, it's one of the, you know, I've always liked her a lot. I mean, she's kind of got the whole package, not to the level of Tate, but Tate doesn't have it to the level of either Cyborg in one way or Gina Carano in another way, but it's the best she got, and they do a damn good job, and it's just disappointing she gets hit with that. And, you know, it's kind of sad. Again, not as sad as it's going to be if Dennis Hallman is cut tomorrow. And I know Dana's upset that, you know, his twig and giggle berries were shown on TV, but I mean, realistically, I think he was a little too excited by all of this, and was very upset, a little bit too upset with the fact that he wore such a, revealing set of trunks into the ring.
He wore a bikini brief, bikini bottoms to the ring, essentially.
And he looked like Mr. Anderson.
This is Dennis Hallman. He wore the most preposterous, small, tiny little shorts. And Dana was so angry and irate at what he wore that he gave his opponent, Brian Ebersole, a $70,000 bonus for beating him in the first round and getting those shorts off television.
He gave the award to a guy who's got an arrow shaved out of his chest hair, pointing up to his head.
The Harrow. That's what they called it, the Harrow. Anyway,
come on, Dana.
Google it, everybody. Actually, don't Google it. You don't need to see these shorts. We're going to be back in a moment for Hour 2, Pro Wrestling Talk, and more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as I am every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, mostly pro wrestling in this hour. Spent the first hour talking about last night's UFC 133 event in Philadelphia, which Mike attended live, as well as the axing of Fedor Emelianenko, the axing of Marlos Kunin, and we didn't really talk about it, but the axing of John Olav Inamo. I was, Valentin Overeem, which I did not mess up. All axed from Golden Glory, so they are gone. And tomorrow we may see the official axing of Dennis Hallman as well, and perhaps others. So, and WWE did a bunch of cuts this weekend as well. We'll talk about that here in Hour 2. But first off, we're going to start by previewing the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. And Mike, are you going to be purchasing this pay-per-view event?
Let me answer that question with a question. Do I have to?
I'm not going to make you.
Then, no, what I will do is go over to WrestlingObserver.com and follow the live play-by-play coverage that you and Dave will be doing tonight before the radio show.
That's right. We are going to be doing live, ongoing coverage of said event at WrestlingObserver.com. This is Hardcore Justice. I suppose we should talk a little bit about the buy rate. I think we talked about the buy rate of Destination X last week. I'm pretty sure we did, but it did.
80K.
It did poorly. 8,000 buys. And a cursory glance at the lineup for this show and the build for this show, I don't think this one's doing much more than 8.
No, if we were talking about that last week, I'm thinking like 7, you know, because, you know, as much of a fail as this UFC 133 show is going to be, I mean, at worst, I figure 250, 275, worst. I mean, and TNA is going to do, you know, a million plus viewers a week, and they're going to do 7,000 buys. Ouch.
I don't know if I'd go as low as 7. I think maybe right around 8,500. I think that'd be a safe bet. But when we come back from the break, we're going to run down the lineup for this show, talk about the matches, and give you a preview here at Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're previewing the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. And Mike, during the break, you were telling me about the match involving the FBI that is on the show tonight. Would you like to tell us more?
No, there was actually no show. I went to Wikipedia to get the card lineup. And I saw that on there, and I was taken aback for a minute because it was like, well, you know I have been keeping up with it as much as I probably should be, but I didn't know the FBI was going to be back making a one-night appearance. I wonder how this happened. You know, I'm kind of racking my brain there for a second, and it's like, well, oh, that was from last year. But I'm probably not the only one where if you said, hey, did you hear the FBI was on this show? Remember, they did an angle on TV. People would actually watch, you know, people who actually watch would probably think back and go, I don't remember that, but I'd probably believe it. Oh, okay.
I wish everybody could have heard you running down the card when you first tried to figure out what was going on with the FBI on this show. That was awesome. Great radio that nobody heard. All right, let's talk about this show. Main event, Sting and Kurt Angle for the TNA heavyweight title. They started this off by claiming that Angle had never beaten Sting. And then somebody figured out that not only had Angle beaten Sting, but he'd beaten him for the championship. So then they changed the angle to Angle had never beaten Sting clean. Think about that. What a way to build up your storyline. So I guess tonight Kurt Angle is going to try to beat Sting clean and win the title. And I think the match will be all right. I don't think it's going to be great. I think it'll be maybe even good. 4 stars? Nah, probably not. But I don't think we'll be embarrassed by this match.
No, you could actually say it'll probably be 4 stars for the condition and the age and what these guys can do. And again, that's not like slighting Kurt Angle or anything, but I mean, you know, it'll probably be really good for them, and Kurt will kill himself to make it as good as it can possibly be. And he, you know, Sting, it's not like Sting won't go along with it, but, you know, Angle's going to push him anyway. And I think he's going to be, you know, fine too. So as long as it doesn't go on, you know, super long or anything like that, it is going to be good. It's, you know, with no Jeff Jarrett here, you know, so we don't get, you know, that's the one thing with at least you could say about Jarrett and Angle, even though they did every bizarre, goofy thing to keep the thing going, you know, ending in basically a wrestling match, you know, working absolutely backwards. With that not in the equation, I mean, it's always up to Kurt Angle to do his part to carry the main event portion of the proceedings, and I think he'll do it here, and I'll say Sting holds on to the belt in some sort of wacky fashion because he's a wacky guy.
So you think Sting's going to win?
Sure.
I just figure Angle's going to win because I got the Bound for Glory main event, Bound for Glory tournament, and I don't know. I figure it's got to be Kurt Angle if, like, Crimson is going to win. I do not want to see a Crimson versus Sting match. I just don't.
Yeah, but what are the odds that, I mean, they're very legit. You're talking about Todd's odds. There are very legitimate odds that whoever wins the thing never gets a title shot anyway.
That
Didn't
is true.
Didn't they forget about the, what was their Money in the Bank thing that they had where everybody, it was Feast or Famine or whatever it was, Feast or Fired, where
yeah.
You got a title shot and it ended up being like Kevin Nash or the Cash One In on the Guns or something like that because they forgot about it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, realistically, you probably won't see Crimson Sting anyway, even if it is Crimson winning.
I would be very surprised if they forgot the Bound for Glory tournament. This one I would be surprised if they, but, you know, I suppose anything is possible, so...
Really? Why?
Listen, it's been the focus of television for like 4 months. This one, to me, would be impossible for them to forget. Kevin Nash winning a briefcase, I forgot that the next day. I can't blame them.
Okay, so how many points does Crimson have leading this thing, Brian?
I think he's got like 40.
But do you know?
Well, of course not.
But, well, there you go.
But I know he's in first place.
You know, they could change this. And again, the loyal people that have been watching this went through the January 4th thing. They've been up and down, you know, this road so many times where things are forgotten about and everything else. Where if that happens, they'll just go, eh.
We've got Beer Money against Mexican America for the tag team titles. Beer Money are the champions. Anarquia and Hernandez challenging for the titles. I know that one of these days are going to want to go single with Bobby Roode and James Storm. I guess if it's imminent, they'll lose the titles here tonight. I don't know if it is imminent. I don't know about Anarquia and Hernandez as the tag team champions, but quite frankly, it doesn't matter all that much. So I guess we'll see. They injured James Storm on television. I guess maybe that's to play into a title change here. I will just go out on a limb and predict that Mexican America become the tag team champions.
I was going to say that just to say that because that's probably how they would do things. But since you're doing that, I will say James Storm overcomes, and they actually beat Mexican America.
We have Mickey James versus Winter for the women's title. On TV, they've built up Mickey James against about six girls. They've chosen Winter here for the match, I guess. Mickey James and Winter. I think it will be all right. You know, when Winter, Katie Lee Burchill in WWE, I always heard, God, why doesn't she wrestle more? She's really good, and I've seen some of her matches, and I have not been blown away. Could have been the opponent. That's always possible. Mickey James is a pretty good worker. So maybe this will be a surprisingly good match. Hopefully. I'd always like every match to be surprisingly good. But I would presume that Mickey James retains the title here.
I will say the same thing on that. And yes, just kind of hope it doesn't go too long. And hopefully they can just kind of, again, just get through it. And I have faith in Mickey James.
We've got Kendrick, Alex Shelley, and Austin Aries in a three-way for the X title. If there is an X division god, Austin Aries will win this match and the championship. In my unofficial tally, Austin Aries has in fact had the best match on every single TNA show that he has appeared on since signing, which is quite a streak. So I would expect that, looking at this card, to continue tonight. I think this will be awesome. And as noted, hopefully Aries wins the title.
I wouldn't have any problem with that whatsoever, but I would rather see this thing, as long as it's a good match, see Aries lose, even though he dominates or something like that, and Shelley or Kendrick get the win, and then Aries can win it, you know, next time around. In my world, I would just build him up a little bit more so you have something for the next pay-per-view that people want to see. And I don't think people would have a problem. Say Shelley wins the belt, you know, from Kendrick, even though Aries does all the work or something like that. People like Shelley, and they have no problem seeing a Shelley-Aries contest. So that would work out fine. And even if Kendrick did it, you know, Kendrick would build up to Aries beating Kendrick, and Kendrick would be annoying enough till the next pay-per-view so people would want to see him get beat.
Well, the problem with your theory is that Aries is a heel, and the other two are babyfaces. And I would just put it on Aries now and then build up Shelley as a big baby face to challenge for the title on the next show.
Again, it's TNA. I'm just kind of throwing it out there.
We've got Fortune and Immortal, AJ Daniels and Kazarian against Abyss, Gunner, and Scott Steiner. There's a team for you. It should be all right. AJ is really great. Daniels is really great. Kazarian is pretty good. Abyss is a great giant. Gunner is not bad in the ring. And Scott Steiner is going to do some push-ups. So could be worse, I guess. Probably a decent match.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, even though it kind of looks, well, it looks like what it is on paper. I mean, Abyss has worked with these guys so long. He's a good launching pad and knows what to do with them. Gunner, you know, again, Daniels, Kazarian, AJ Styles, for all the talk of, like, you know, the young guys of TNA have been around now pretty much forever. They've been around for over a decade, all of them, I believe, at least. So, you know, working with those guys and watching Scott Steiner just be Scott Steiner and have presence and still get a reaction, even though, well, he's Scott Steiner, you know, as far as his, you know, work goes now. I mean, it's just, you know, and again, it should actually be pretty entertaining. I have no problem with this whatsoever. I have no problem if there's plunder or something like that. I just don't want to see breakups of teams or anything like that. Just have the best match you can.
We've got a match that I'm horrified at the prospect of. We're going to talk about it when we come back from the break. There are two Bound for Glory series matches on this show. One is D'Angelo De Niro versus D-Von, which should be all right. And then we've got Rob Van Dam against Crimson. Talk about this when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, leading into the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. Starts immediately after this show goes off the air. So if you're not buying the pay-per-view, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of the website. You can check that out. And Dave and I will be up later on this evening as well with a brand new radio show exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com talking about the program in detail. So, the next match, we're doing a preview here for the pay-per-view. The next match to get into is Crimson Rob Van Dam. This match, I don't know if he was hurt. I don't know if he was sick. I don't know if he's just getting old. But Rob Van Dam on Impact was, like, the worst. I mean, he was so bad. He was slow. He looked tired. He was out of position. Just, it was not good. And Crimson is, you know, no fault of his own. He's just green. He's new. Very green. And Rob Van Dam versus Crimson one-on-one sounds like a horrible idea. Like, a really, really, really horrible idea. Like, when you put a pay-per-view together, you go, okay, let's see. Kendrick, Shelley, Aries, they can have a good match together. Let's put them together. Kurt Angle. Well, if anybody can carry Sting, it's Kurt Angle. Let's put that match together. And then you get to, who can we put Crimson with? Let's see. How about Rob Van Dam? Who is thinking that? This match is going to be horrible.
All anybody's thinking that in that equation is that Rob Van Dam is going to get crowd response, and that's the only way you can really justify that, because Rob Van Dam is 40 years old. He can do things that guys half his age will never be able to do, can't do and won't be able to do, and he is still doing amazing things now, but he is a little bit, you know, he's going to be prone to off nights. It's not like he never had them in the first place. I mean, Rob Van Dam works the Rob Van Dam style, and Rob Van Dam works well with other guys who know how to work the Rob Van Dam style. He and Jeff Hardy, from the moment right off the bat at Invasion, that was a good mixture. He and Jerry Lynn, a good mixture. Guys who he knows and guys who know him, it's a good mixture. Sting and him, not a good mixture. Sting Kennedy and him, not a good mixture.
Oh, my God.
Him and Crimson, not a good mixture, and it doesn't help Crimson.
I'm trying to think of, like, a Crimson, Rob Van Dam, Mr. Anderson three-way.
Make it a four-way. Put Sting in there.
I like Sting.
But his bodies are flying around, though. In that equation, it's the worst possible scenario for Sting's. When you put him in there, it's even worse.
Yeah,
all right, put Scott Steiner in.
Sting would just get out of the way. I don't know. A lot of people think that, oh, Sting's bad, Sting's horrible, it's hard to have a... Listen, I've seen some bad guys. Sting is not one of them. He's older, he can't do what he used to do, but I never see matches where it's like, my God, Sting's just hideous in this match is horrible. You know, he's fine.
Yeah, but he can't take it and add to it, you know, a whole lot either, outside of more crowd response where... Your flares and your guys. I mean, there are guys who just can do that with almost anybody. He's not one that really can. So it's like, you know, it's like the three-way. It's not his fault. It really wasn't any of those guys' faults. Because none of them, I mean, it's just styles make fights. They don't make wrestling matches.
Well, styles make wrestling matches, too.
Well, that's true. That is true. Sorry about that.
Crimson and Rob Van Dam style is going to make for a potentially explosive match, and not in a good way.
Dud.
Like, literally, they might both explode. I don't know.
Spontaneous combustion?
D'Angelo, De Niro, and Devon. They're feuding, I guess.
Leave my kids alone. You know what? Those kids, again, you know, Bully Ray, you know, they didn't listen, and they got beat up, and they put their dad out there on the line. Those boys are grown-ass men at this point. They look like it, at least, enough to be on TV. Enough to be hanging around with professional wrestlers and sports entertainers. Maybe this is what they need. Maybe, you know, Pope needs to take them and give them some advice, or who knows what's going to happen with that situation. But look, I think those kids are old enough now. Maybe they deserve to get smacked around if they're that dumb, Devon.
Well, that's kind of funny. Devon, he's coming off as a real prick here. Stay away from my boys. And I'm like, your boys look like they're in their mid-20s, and they look like a full-grown, full-fledged tag team. I think they can take care of themselves. But nope, in storyline, they are giant six-year-olds, and they're hanging around with a bad fella here in the Pope. And anyway, they're going to have a match. I think the match is going to be all right. I like D-Von. Pope's pretty good. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be an acceptable match. Not a blow-away pay-per-view encounter or anything like that, but I think it's going to be fine.
No, I like both of them. And again, it's kind of like the six-man. I don't need any storyline in or anything like that. Just have good matches because of the Crimson-Rob Van Dam match. You know, that's all I'm looking for out of those matches because, you know, some of the ones they have, obviously, are going to, you know, probably not make you want to separate from your money, but at least, you know, you could take, you know, tell people to get the replay. If those matches that there's not a lot of nonsense and it's just, they're just good matches, then, you know, I'm completely fine with that.
All right. We've got Mr. Anderson and Bully Ray. I've been a big fan of Bully Ray lately. He has been awesome. So I think we're going to be all right with him in there. With Mr. Anderson. Will it be a great match? Probably not. Will it be horrible? Probably not. Probably just be a decent little battle.
I want plunder.
You want plunder?
Plunder!
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
There's not enough gimmickry on this card. I mean, there's got to be plunder somewhere. I demand plunder in this match because I don't want to see him chain wrestle. I like Bully Ray being Bully Ray.
To see them chain wrestle. Come on.
like Kane and Show. You know, actually, that was really funny. I know people didn't like that. I found that incredibly funny. But I would not find Anderson and Bully doing that, so I want to see Bully. I'm not saying, you know, come to the ring with a new Jack trash can or anything like that. But if we start getting into, you know, a situation where you can imagine Dusty Rhodes sitting there on commentary saying there's a woman in the man's bathroom and there's plunder and Tony, look out. You know, that's what I want to see out of that match.
Well, in order for that to really work out, you've got to have Dusty doing commentary, and he's not going to be doing that here.
Oh, by the way, and because I always like Dusty on commentary and FCW with Matthews, William Regal doing the commentary for FCW is awesome, and John Moxley down there is awesome.
I've heard that the commentary has really picked up with Regal. Like, he was a little iffy early on, and now he's become quite awesome.
Yeah, and he's really building something about John Moxley, too, because it was like he was a weird signing, and it's like he's got the mouth, and he's got a voice, and he's got a presence, but he's really early in his career, and it's like, God, with the thing being his interviews, you know, and the way they script everything, what are they going to do with him? But, you know, as of right now in Florida, it's actually been really cool, and I guess they've been lining up this thing, and I'm not sure, you know, because I've only seen it on YouTube, I'm not sure where they're at with it, but he and Tyler Black, which, you know, again, I forget whatever Tyler Black's name is now, but, I mean, that's just, you know, a really good match and makes me want to actually see Florida more.
I'm actually looking at the picture from WWE.com with his new generic short haircut, Dean Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose, yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
But at least they're letting him talk right now because it is Florida, and there are William Regal getting behind him, and you know, him using the Union Jack cutter, and Regal just saying, you know, I invented that move, and just talking him up and along. It's watching Regal on there. It's always disappointing to think, God, if you could only have managers.
Yeah, I don't know. The John Moxley character, I just think he there was something about him with that the look that he had. And now he looks like just a guy.
And they're comparing him to Piper, is how they're doing it right now, too, which, you know, in a way...
Well, he looked like just a guy.
You know, maybe the closest thing, one of the closest things right now to him.
Well, there you go. All right, Miss Tessmacher and Tara against Mexican America. Mexican America, not Anarchy and Hernandez, unfortunately. It'll be Rosita and Sarita against Tessmacher and Tara. It is for the Knockouts Tag Team titles, which Tessmacher and Tara hold. And, I don't know about this one here either. This one could be a strange term to use here, but this could be an ugly match with some beautiful women.
Like a lot of these women. No real problem with any of these women at all whatsoever. And you know what? I'm going to change my pick earlier on. I'll change my pick. I'll go with you. And Mexican America defeats Beer Money. And then the Mexican-American ladies defeat Tessmacher and Tara, and Rosita Sarita Anarquia and Hernandez, which now Hernandez really needs an A at the end of his name, so it all flows along nicely. They will all be holding gold come the tapings, the next set of tapings for Impact.
Hernandeza?
Has there been a wacky luchador before we could steal a name from?
Why don't they just do what they did with Costatinos last night when they shortened it to Costa, and they'll just have Rosita, Sarita, Anarquia, and Herna.
That would be great. Or, you know what, even better, maybe somehow we can find out he's working under a typical TNA contract that'll run out and nobody knows he's actually on a per-match deal and WWE signs him and he can be the new Sin Cara.
They could do that. They could do that. I was trying to think of another thing they could do. It's a little late now because he's already in TNA, but since he's Hernandez, they could have brought him up and called him Fernandez.
You know what?
Because you know, like they did with
Manny Fernandez and Hercules Hernandez, he'd be Hercules Fernandez.
Yeah, because Shima Zeon, they didn't want him to be able to, they wanted to be able to copyright or trademark his name, so they wouldn't call him Shima Zeon, which is his any name. They'd call him, what they call him, like Zima Shion or something wacky like that. It's like, why do you even bother? Why do you even bother? You know, if you bring
you know
a guy
what?
Up,
trademark Hercules Fernandez for Ed.
If you bring up Hernandez, let's just say that I sign Hernandez, and I want to make sure I can have his name so that he can't use it if he quits, and so I call him Fernandez, and I trademark that. Okay, when he quits and goes back to the indie scene, and he goes from Fernandez to Hernandez, they're all going to know who he is!
There is a reason WWE does the things that they do with the names, no matter how craptastic the names may be.
We'll be back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. I was thinking during the break of different gimmicks for Hernandez. If I started a wrestling company and brought him in and wanted to make sure that I could trademark his name, how about Gernandez? He does a bear gimmick.
That could work. He just, you know, the music hits the loudspeakers. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like, you know, the when Barry Darso was the Repo Man, he could kind of have music like that. He could scamper out. That could work. What else you got?
How about Bernandez? He's a an Eskimo.
Oh, not even an Eskimo. He is a Mexican that somehow got transported, much like Cactus Jack did when he got lost in Cleveland. He could be transported up to, like, the Inuits. And he could be living up there, and he didn't know how he got there, but a family adopted him, and even though he's Mexican, he lives up there. Yes, he could be a giant Eskimo.
Hmm. How about... I'm out. I was thinking, trying to figure out a way to use Mernandez, like Frank Mer. Who called
I
him
got
that?
It. You could have some sort of tie-in while they're still on Spike TV, where actually he comes out and he's Frank Mir's stunt double, and he talks just like Frank Mir during interviews.
Sure. Who was it that called him Frank Mir? Was that Brock?
I think it was.
Somebody called him Frank Mir. I don't know why
Frankincense
I was saying that.
Frankincense and Mir.
Yeah, exactly. Mernandez.
You could have him actually be, you know, Matt Morgan had a stuttering gimmick. You could have him being a little slow in school type of gimmick where he's Durr Hernandez.
Exactly. This is the kind of audio you can get as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com.
Bruno Sammartino did not talk about this.
No, Bruno Sammartino is much better than the two of us put together. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. He's awesome. The show's available in the archives, as are thousands of others. Think about 3,000 shows we have in our archives. If you sign up today at WrestlingObserver.com, you not only get all of the brand new shows that we do every single day, but you get our full archive of 3,000 shows available at your fingertips. You just head up there. Do a search, find the show you want, and download it. You can get a sample by going to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. We've got a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Click the link. It's an MP3. Just download it. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to input anything. Just download the show, and if you like it, sign up. We do this radio show, Wrestling Observer Live, once a week on Sports Byline USA and Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92. If you love this show and it's the only chance you get to hear it, you are missing out. WrestlingObserver.com. It's $10.99 to sign up. We do daily radio shows. The quality is exactly the same as the quality you're listening to right now. We don't have like a voice recorder hooked up to a cell phone. I did that once. It sounded horrible. It's professional. It is the same quality you're listening to right now. We have some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, as Mike noted, as guests on the show. And you will not regret it. I say this all the time, and I firmly believe this. If you love Wrestling Observer Live, if you enjoy this show and it's the only chance you get to listen to it on Sunday afternoons, I guarantee that you will not regret signing up at WrestlingObserver.com. I guarantee it. And if you sign up for a month and you do not love all of the content that is available there for you, email me and I'll make it right. So WrestlingObserver.com, that is the place to go. It's only $10.99 a month. You know, that's cheaper than lunch on your average day. And if you pay that price, you get full access to everything on the website for an entire month. Give it a shot. Listen to it at the gym. Listen to it on the way to work. Listen to it in the cubicle. Listen to it wherever you go. And I promise you, if you like this show, you will not regret it. All right, we are talking about the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. I think we've run over all the matches on the show. And any final thoughts before we move on, Mike?
Nope. Going to be interesting to see how many people actually watch it. So, and we're actually going to, you know, who knows, even though it can't happen because of the way the contracts are cycled, you know, in another era. Can you imagine Chris Masters popping up like a Muppet on the TNA show tonight?
We have had several WWE guys that were axed and gals. Gail Kim quit. She quit last Monday. She'd been doing some weird Twitter tweets, and she claimed that they wanted her out of the ring in a minute in the Women's Battle Royal last Monday. So she went out. She got in the ring, and she immediately just eliminated herself to see if anybody would notice. That's what she said. And it was so weird that, like, you know, at the time, I talked to a couple of people, and I know at least a couple of people in WWE were like, okay, this has to be some sort of you know, they're doing the Punk thing. It's got to be some sort of angle. They considered an angle back before Kong had left for her pregnancy. They considered like a veteran girls versus the plastic blondes sort of gimmick. And they were thinking, okay, well, now they're going to be doing this gimmick. You know, that's why Melina and Gail are acting so weird on Twitter and this and that. Nope. They were just weird and they got fired. Well, Gail quit. She's married to a celebrity chef, so she's going to be okay. Melina dating John Morrison. She was cut. No surprise. I think people had been expecting her to be cut for a long time. They cut Vladimir Kozlov. They cut Chris Masters. They cut D.H. Smith. None of these really surprises, except I guess Santino. Kozlov. Because Santino and Kozlov had been a very popular tag team. You know, not like, you know, they weren't over in the sense that they were going to get, you know, matches on Raw, that sort of thing. But, you know, the people seemed to like him at house shows that I went to, and they were very popular. So that one kind of surprised me. But, you know, late spring cleaning in WWE.
Yeah, right after the issue of the financials, you know, D.H. Smith, we had him on on our show. And you had him on as well right before he went to WWE, and I think it was actually even after he signed, he came on. That's in the archives for both shows. And, you know, he was working in New Japan. The faster he can get back to New Japan, I think, is going to be by far the best thing for him. You know, he hasn't really had a chance because it takes time to, you know, with the way that he is, to develop mic skills and things like that. He can do that over there because of the way things go. I mean, Carl Anderson's had a really good last 18 months. I mean, he's getting better and better and better. And during the G1, he's had some really good matches, reportedly. So, I mean, you go over there, MVP is doing well over there, and he needs opponents for that Intercontinental title anyway. Again, with all the guys that are over there, with all the ones he meshes with and with his style, the faster he can get over to New Japan, the better. And he's one of those guys where Japan's not open for too many people. He would actually be one that they would get in there right away. I mean, what they're doing with Lance Archer is one thing because he probably doesn't cost a whole lot either. Now, would I think D.H. Smith would cost more? Actually, yeah, I do. But I think you can do a lot more with him, too, where I think that opportunity will be available to him. It's something I think he should jump on.
I would not be surprised in the slightest if Harry went into MMA In fact, I would be, to be honest with you, I'd be more surprised if we went to TNA than if you went to work, tried to find some work in mixed martial arts. But we'll see. I mean, he's been training for a long time. I've talked to people that have trained with him that, you know, there have been people that said if this guy just came and started training full time, he would be like a heavyweight to contend with within like a year or two. You know, he's very young. He's been training for a while. He's going to improve every time he's in there. You know, he's a lot of potential for Harry Smith. As far as everybody else, no real surprises anywhere. Melina, I was just told, all attitude, you know. I'm sure she's going to say otherwise, but that is straight from the company. This is not fans online. I know, you know, she's posted a couple things saying, you know, fans are mean and they say these things and this and that, but that is straight from the company. It was her attitude. That is why she is gone. And
There's also reasons why companies have policies, even though it's impossible to enforce, why companies have policies on people dating. You know, Drew McIntyre, young guy they're going to build around. He's been touched by Vince McMahon, but you got that whole situation with Taryn Terrell, or what was her name?
Tiffany.
I miss Tiffany. God, I miss Tiffany. But you know, with that situation with Morrison, kind of the same way with Melina, where, you know, of course she's so talented. She's like the greatest diva ever, and all of those things he's got to say because, you know, their boyfriend, girlfriend, but still, it's something that WWE rolls its eyes at, and she's been a thorn anyway, always seemingly saying the wrong things when it comes to WWE protocol, so, yeah, not good.
Money in the Bank buy rate up 20%, which is good, but does not look like it's going to hit the 150,000 buys that I predicted. It may hit as much as 140, so close, but I was apparently wrong about this. I thought that it caught on bigger than it did. It appears that just, you know, it brought back some disgruntled fans to television. I think this is the key. It got people talking. It got people interested enough to watch it on YouTube. It got people interested enough it didn't really get people interested enough to watch the television all that much because, you know, the ratings stayed relatively the same. I did think that it would compel more of the viewers to attempt to buy the pay-per-view. It did to a degree, but not to the degree that I thought. So I don't know. We don't have the buy rate yet, and I would rather wait until we actually had it. But it is looking, like I said, that we're probably around 135,000 buys, which is still good, but not nearly what I expected.
Well, you know, I think I said around this amount, and it's good. And the problem is they're not going to look at it. They're going to look at it as disappointing. Even though they would spin it, if they're looking at it from a financial point of view and they're asked about it that way, of course, they're going to hype it up. But creatively, again, this whole thing was probably meant to go the way it did with Hunter and this being more of a Hunter McMahon thing. And it was something that they could do to spark interest. But really, with the meat and potatoes of this thing is really going to be Triple H taking over the shows and all that stuff. And, you know, that's the part that's depressing because, you know, go back to your pro wrestling roots. I mean, you laid good foundation with Punk. You could have went with it and went a different direction for a little while, still doing the Triple H thing and trying to utilize it and see how far it could go. You got a lot of pay-per-views coming up, and I think they made a mistake that way, but, you know, time will tell.
Main event of SummerSlam is Cena versus Punk, title for title. Sounds to me like way early. they're doing it, and you know, obviously, and this has been the plan forever, so God knows, but, you know, the idea eventually is the title will be on Alberto Del Rio for when they go to Mexico. And what would be your prediction for the SummerSlam match? Who do you think is going to win? Is Alberto going to cash in on Sunday, or what can we expect?
I'm saying Alberto because it's got to happen sooner or later, and we could still end up with a title split or something like that, but I just... It's like WWE, you know, looking at themselves as the company that they look at themselves at or that Vince does. You know, we may have been lured into a false sense of security with them bringing back, you know, wrestling. And for at least a little while, bickering announcers went away and it was, you know, choke finishes and interviews after title wins and interesting things. And, you know, it just seems like they're content every year. They have this big WrestleMania. It's like the spring release, you know, it's the extravaganza, you know, spring release that they have, and they go into a malaise after that every year. It's the same old thing. And then it's time for the summer blockbuster. and they have that big event, and they happen to have the Christmas one, you know, after January 1st, but you could look at it that way, too, where it's like, you know, the big holiday opening. And I swear they seem to be content to do that, and it's just, you know, it's head-scratching because it's like, you didn't have to be done with Punk this soon. You didn't. You could draw this thing out. You got Night of Champions and this and that and the other. Why not draw it out a little bit more? I'm just, again, they must have a plan. I'm just surprised by it. Way too early.
Especially when you're rushing it and you're rushing it with like 2 weeks of promotion. You know, if they rushed it and it was like, okay, we're going to rush it, but we've got 4 weeks to promote the match now or 5 weeks to promote the match. Then it'd be like, okay, well, that's fine. But they rushed it, and they've got, you know, I mean, they've got a week to promote it because they announced it at the end of last week's show. So that means they've got Raw tomorrow to announce to promote it, and that's it. So I don't know. It just
it's L.A. It's SummerSlam. Didn't really need it anyway.
No, you didn't. We're going to talk about this a little bit more after the break. Plus, we're going to talk about the big thing to look out for this coming week from WWE. It's not something on Raw. It is something on SmackDown. I don't know exactly what's going on, but we're going to know a hell of a lot more on Tuesday. So we're going to talk about that after the break and wrap this show up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the last couple of minutes here on the show, the big story for next week. What can you look out for besides SummerSlam? Well, Tuesday night, Sin Cara is going to be back on SmackDown. Now, why is that interesting that Sin Cara is going to be back? Well, his suspension is not supposed to end until the week after. So, what are they going to do on Tuesday? Is Sin Cara going to return a week early? Which one would think, you know, this is a lot about your wellness policy when you suspend a guy for 4 weeks, but you need him back, so you let him come back a week early. Or are they going to try to take someone else and put him under the mask and play the role of Sin Cara for 1 week until the real deal can return? You know, people were asking why. You know, why would they do that? Well, you know, some people argue they want Sin Cara on SummerSlam, and so they've got to have somebody on SmackDown to promote that appearance there. But his suspension is not up at SummerSlam, so technically he can't work at SummerSlam either. So why would he need to come back on Tuesday? Is it going to be the real guy? Is it going to be the real guy? And they're going to say, oh, no, that wasn't him. That was another guy. What are they going to do with Sin Cara? It's a very interesting story, Mike.
I don't think it'll be a midget in a burial, but yeah, it would be one thing if he actually was wearing a full Liger-type bodysuit or something like that. He doesn't, so, you know, who knows? It should be pretty obvious. I mean, I don't know why they just don't wait out the suspension and bring him back. I just don't know.
So that is Tuesday night. Next week is Survivor Series. Next week on the program, we are going to be talking about that show. We'll give you a full preview of the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Tell you about all of the matches on the show. It is the big WWE event of the summer. It is taking place for, I believe, the third straight year in Los Angeles. It is now an LA tradition. So that is next week on the show. In moments at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave Meltzer is going to be up with live ongoing play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view. If you're getting the show or if you're not getting the show, head to WrestlingObserver.com and get the updates. Dave and I are going to be up after the show tonight. We're going to have full results of the show, backstage news. We'll talk about all of the news of the day as well. It's going to be a huge show up at WrestlingObserver.com, so check it out. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening, as always. The folks at Sports Byline and Sirius, we'll talk to you next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.